Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I was told I was supposed to wait for a presenter to present me to do the intro, and I was like, well, I don't see anyone, so I'll do it myself so we can get going, and if they come in, we'll pretend like this never happened, and we'll just start again, okay? So I was like, anyways, awesome. Well, I kind of introduced myself in the presentation anyways, so, but I know we're supposed to start with a prayer. Do you all have a specific one? Yeah. Because I don't. I can borrow it. Thank you. Okay. Ready? Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities. And may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord and forever and ever. Amen. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen. Awesome. Well, welcome, everyone. Thanks for coming to my talk. This title is a little bit different than what's listed in your program, but essentially the same thing, Branding and Digital Communications for Catholic Schools. Anything I talk about can also be applied to a parish, a diocese, a Catholic institution. I'm mainly just going to be using examples for Catholic schools since this is for, like, the Catholic schools tract, but it can all be applied pretty much across the board. So a little bit about me. That's me and my family. You've probably seen my three kids either running around or me carrying the baby around. We brought all of them to the conference. Three boys, three redheads. A lot of fun in our family. My husband's also here. He's actually with Dickerson and Baker. They're the ones on the lanyards. So if you see him around, he'd love to talk to you, I'm sure. But he also helps with Impact House Media. So it's a company that I own and run, and he helps own and run it as well. But so my background is actually in institutional church communications, very niche, really pigeonholed myself. I got a licentiate from a university in Rome, a pontifical university in Rome. So what I love about it is that it gives me a lot of background from strategy of communications that I'm able to apply kind of in my day-to-day and making the tangible deliverables and, like, marketing needs that I do for our clients. I was on the Twitter team for the Holy See Press Office for a couple events. That was pretty fun. I've never done Twitter outside of that, but it was a cool experience. Got to meet the Pope. That was pretty fun. So yeah, institutional and church communications. I lived 3 years in Rome, so that was a lot of fun and very cool. And then now, basically from that, I started Impact House Media, which does, like, all of the marketing deliverables that you would need for digital communications. Not all of them, but a lot. Marketing, digital communications is such a vast, you know, realm. But so we do video production, graphic design, everything listed up here that essentially allows us to be a one-stop shop for your marketing needs for a campaign, for your school, for a rebrand, whatever it might be. So some of our clients, just to kind of give a scope of my experience, this is specifically geared towards knowing that we've worked with Catholic schools and I'm talking to you all about Catholic schools and about social media. How many of you have heard of Catholic Link? No is okay. Most people haven't heard of us, but they you see our stuff all the time if you follow Catholic content. It exists to essentially offer resources for the new evangelization online. It's one of the largest Catholic websites in the English-speaking world. The Spanish side, which I don't have a part of, is the largest Catholic website in the Spanish-speaking world. But we, for scope, we have about 60,000 followers on Instagram. We had 200,000 followers on Facebook until it was hacked and the page was stolen and we didn't get it back. So now we're starting over. So that's a very large scale social media project. I mean, it's a digital platform that exists to, like, spread on digital platforms. But I've done a lot of videos for Catholic schools, institutional videos for Catholic schools, making sure those are in line with their brand, their branding guidelines. And I've worked extensively with the Diocese of Austin, doing, like, web rebuilds and refreshes for young adult ministries. video production all across the board in many offices, including the Catholic Schools office. So yeah, that's just a little bit of the work and that I'm bringing to the table. But so branding for Catholic schools. I'm going to start with why it's important. So I got you hooked from the beginning. It's important because branding as a whole, I mean, it's your institutional identity, right? It's the messages that you put out there. It's the visuals that you put out there. And I think it's important when we're talking about advancement, admissions, stewardship, because if people don't know who you are or what you do, or they don't like who you're saying you are or what you do, then it's going to be a harder invite into your mission. So branding, I think, oftentimes is thought of as something that companies like Nike or Chick-fil-A or Coca-Cola or the Army do, because it's like a lot of what they do to sell you their product. But if Catholic schools don't have a very clear brand mission vision, it just makes it harder to actually invite people to join you in that. And then digital communications are the way by which you communicate that to other people. And it should be different across the different forms of digital communications. If you're treating your social media like you treat your website, you're doing it wrong. You know, if you treat an internal newsletter the same way you treat a social media post, you're doing it wrong. So each one is a specific tool that can help further your message and your branding along the way. And the second reason why it's important for you to be aware that you are a brand in whatever parish school you are is that if you're not establishing that narrative, then you're leaving it up for someone else to establish that narrative. So for a school, for example, if you say that, yes, we have like lovely, wonderful teachers, or that's something that you know about your school, but you're not showing people why that's the case, then a disgruntled parent in fourth grade that's really mad at Ms. Smith for something might actually have a louder voice in what your teachers are like than you do as an institution. So a lot of it is kind of also just being aware of PR. If you're not telling the story, then you're leaving the door open for someone else to tell the story. And that can also be harder to reel back in as opposed to being proactive. So things to consider with forming your brand. I've had several conversations with people that are new in their role within advancement at a school, and they say, you know, I know I should be telling our story, but how do I do that? Where do I start? And a lot of it can be found in your mission statement as a school. I find that most schools have mission and vision statements, but it's just a matter of communicating that clearly to other people. But it's something that if it's not well established already and you're sitting there thinking, yeah, we could do some work on our branding, it's something you want to bring your major stakeholders into. And for a school, that would be active students, that would be prospective families, that would be active parents. That would be active donors, that would be teachers and administration. One of the things that I do for clients is offering essentially like instead of a feasibility study, it's a marketing study where you do interviews with stakeholders to understand how they're perceiving you, what their goals are, why they like supporting your school, why they like attending your school, because that can help you get a good understanding of where you are. And then that can help form where you want to go and how you're going to get there. So involve your stakeholders, have conversations with them, because you're only one part of the equation. From these discussions, hopefully you'll be able to solidify, like, yes, this is who we are, and these are the three to five main messages we want to make sure everyone else knows about our school, too. And with those three to five messages, that's when you start packaging them in different ways for the various platforms you have, whether that's digital, whether that's print, whether that's announcements at Sunday Mass about open house at your school. So you have your messaging from this branding, and then you have to push it out in different ways to attract people to you. What I've found in my work with Catholic schools is typically what we're most concerned about is funding and admissions. Those are kind of the two key things. You want people to come to your school, and you want people to help financially support your school. So that's always a helpful framework to have in mind when you're thinking about the messages that you want to be pushing out. So now that we have kind of the idea of branding, we have digital communications. I'm only going to speak to the three listed up here, the institutional, video, social media, and website, because that's what I have a lot of experience in. I know little to nothing about SEO. That's what my web developer does. But that's also an aspect of digital communications, is making sure you have good SEO on your website, you know? So I'm not going to speak to the whole scope of digital communications, but I wanted to kind of hone in on these three areas. This picture is actually from an institutional video we did for a school in Waco, which I'll talk a little bit about it later. But it's a great example of storytelling with video, which is what I'm going to talk about next. So I know a lot of people say, you know, tell the story of your brand, like tell the story of your institution. One very helpful book that I have found is called Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller, who does a great job and a deep dive into how to tell your, like, the actual story of your brand. And he does that by pointing out that people love stories, and every good movie follows the same narrative arc. You have your hero, who's like the main person of the story. You have them encountering a problem. You have a guide to walk them through that problem. And then you have the resolution or their success at the end. So I think he uses the example of like the Cars movie. But to apply it to Catholic schools and how you can apply that to, you know, your brand and your messaging, is that if you want to highlight how great your teachers are and how much they support your students, find a student who can share a story about, you know, saying, when I first got to this school, I was really struggling in reading, but Mrs. Smith took time out of her day to help me, like, after class or, you know, during recess, whatever it might be, to make sure I could get up to speed. And now I'm at an eighth grade reading level in fourth grade. You know, something like that. You have the person, you have something that draws you into their story that illustrates why your teachers are so amazing, as opposed to just saying, we have great teachers here and they care about our students. So anyways, that was a bit of an aside. You could do that in a video too, though. But so video is impactful for digital communications and for your school, specifically institutional videos, because they marry the audio and the visual. And it's a chance for someone to tell a story to, like, hook. I like to think of institutional videos as a hook. It is not the place where you're going to tell everyone about every great thing that you do, even though you do many great things, because people are going to get bored. If they want that information, they will most likely go to your website to get all the AP classes you offer, to get the student-to-teacher ratio, to get the details about your classical curriculum, whatever it might be. But video is a great place to tell stories because you can hear it from the person themselves, and the viewer relates to the person they see on screen. So this, Alan Graham is an example of this, not related to Catholic schools, but a great example of storytelling. This is one of the first short artistic documentaries that I ever did. And, he's in Austin, Texas, and he serves the poor in Austin, Texas, the homeless. And he has a great conversion story, or really reversion story. He was Catholic, but fallen away from the faith. And this just tells his story, and it kind of, and it has some footage of the community that he built to help, offer homes for homeless. It, like, shows, you know, stuff from the truck runs and feeding the homeless that he does. But it doesn't tell you any stats or anything. It doesn't say, you know, he does 3,500 truck runs a month. It doesn't say we're housing 60 homeless brothers and sisters here at Community First. It just tells his story and shows him interacting with the people that he serves. And this is actually when we realize that video narrative storytelling is so powerful for fundraising in particular, because one of my friends is a priest and he's in the area. He's in the Austin area, and a guy walked in. He was like, oh yeah. Like, he knew I produced this video. So he showed it to him, and the guy came back later and he said, you know what? I ended up donating $40,000 to that charity because I wanted to give back to Austin, but I didn't know where, like, I didn't know where would have the most impact. And I was like, wow, Like, we just told this guy's story, and it was so compelling that he wanted to support the cause. And that wasn't even the purpose. We were just doing a video, you know? I was like, well, maybe we should apply this to fundraising videos. And it's worked out very well. So anyways, for a video, I always encourage people to focus on one narrative. Don't try and feature your, like, staff and a parent and a child all in one video. It muddies the narrative that you're trying to tell. People's fear is that if you don't feature everything, that you're going to miss an opportunity to convince someone why you're great or why they should go there. But the video is supposed to be the emotional hook and appeal so that they want to come meet you in person, or so that they schedule a visit to learn more, or that they go to your website to learn more. It's a great emotional hook that, like, a website can't necessarily do, right? So they just have different functions. Social media, I want to make this a bit more practical and tangible, because I know often people are put in charge of social media when it's not really what they want to be doing. It's often seen as a ball and chain, and it adds a big mental load because you have to constantly feed what I call the content beast. Always hungry, always having to provide more content. So what I think is helpful is for every social media platform you have, you establish the purpose of that social media platform. So what I find with schools is that they're usually on Facebook and Instagram and sometimes LinkedIn for potential future hires. They like to have a presence on LinkedIn. But schools aren't necessarily, like, getting on TikTok. They're not creating content for, like, the demographic of their school. It's mainly to reach potential parents that would send their kids to the school. But so, for example, your purpose of your social media could be to create community amongst the parents at your school, and also to inform parents of what's going on. You know, it could be more of like a message event board or something like that. Or the purpose of your social media, which it is for my work with Catholic Link, is actually just to drive people to the website. It acts as a funnel to get people to, like, be interested in the content that we have on there, but then they want to go to the website to read, like, the whole article that we posted. So seeing where your audience is more connected would be helpful. Because, for example, I've been managing the ICSC social media for the 8 weeks leading up to the conference just to get some, like, extra promo in there. And y'all are way more active on Facebook than you are on Instagram. So, which is interesting. And a lot of social media, I like to tell people, you can't break it. You know, it's not like you're gonna, maybe the worst that will happen is that you didn't reach as many people as you could have because you didn't do a reel and you just did a static post instead. But you're not gonna break it, so don't be afraid to try something, and if it flops, just pivot and do something new the next time. So establishing the purpose can help decide what kind of content you post on each platform. Then I do what I call a decide once. And the concept of decide once I got from the book The Lazy Genius, written by Kendra Adachi. It has nothing to do with professional life. It's more of like a organize your own life thing, but it can apply to so many different areas. And the idea is to kind of maximize your output, but minimize the stress it puts on you. Figure out where you can decide once within your social media plan. So for me, when I'm handling an account, I just start with a basic, like, let's post 3 to 5 times a week, because that allows me to add inspiration posts that might pop up without over flooding things. And then from there, I start to analyze, you know, what posts are doing well, what posts aren't doing well. But I decide what days I'm going to post on. So I know I'm always going to post Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Monday will always be a teacher feature. Wednesday will always be an event highlight, and Friday will always be saint quote, you know, because if we're a Catholic school, we want to try and, like, also show that we prioritize our faith, and so we want to have a saint quote out there. Also, stuff like that is nice for being able to, like, shareability and engagement, because not everyone's going to, like, share your teacher feature. You know, I mean, but yeah, go ahead.
Consistency,
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that's what I do. And that's what I also do for recommend for other people, because realistically, your only job isn't social media. So you have many other hats and you have to fill in social media where you can. So I find it helps alleviate the stress of it. And it also helps you not have to constantly think of like, oh shoot, I need to post something. What should I post? You know, so it's still something that is in line with what you want to be telling people about your institution without having to just feel like you need to throw something up to throw something up. Yeah. And then I also create a lot of templates for the type of post I want. So say those are my three like themes that I'm going to do for the next semester, and then I'll switch it up the following semester. But for every saint quote, I have the same template that I use. I might change the colors, I might change the font, but I know it's going to look a certain way. Is everyone familiar with Canva? Yes. Canva saves me. I love Canva. It's awesome because you can create a handful of templates so that you just drop the quote in and it's fine. And it's good to go. It looks professional. It looks nice. It can make your grid look really nice too. So it just kind of levels up what the professionality, I guess, of what your platforms look like. And then the other thing I like to tell people is not to fear the algorithm. I think sometimes we're like unnecessarily like preoccupied with what the algorithm is doing. Typically, I use ChatGPT a lot for stuff like this. I will ask Chat, hey, what is the algorithm for this platform prioritizing right now? And it'll say it's prioritizing video, reels, engagement, whatever. And so I'll just make sure I add those things into the plan. So for the teacher feature, maybe instead of doing a picture of a teacher and a quote, I'll get that teacher to like do a little video blurb, you know, and post that up there because it does better with the algorithm. But at the same time, I think people get preoccupied with, I heard, you know, it's bad to post 7 days a week now. Like it'll downplay your stuff. For Catholic Link, we post 7 times a day, and we still get really good engagement. So I think a lot of it depends on who your audience is, what you're posting. For us at Catholic Link, a lot of our audience is actually Filipinos, like living in the Philippines. And so we post 3 times during the night here, which would be their day there, and 3 times during our day here, which would be their night there. So for us, it makes sense to post 7 times a day, but I think that would be crazy for a school to post 7 times a day, you know? So it kind of depends. And you can look at the insights on Instagram and on Facebook, and it shows you what posts do better, what posts aren't doing well. So you can always refine it. I usually like to sit down and look at things every month just to say, okay, what did really well? Because what I think might do really well did not. Like, okay, let's change it up. One of the posts for ICSC that did surprisingly well is that it was very simple. I just did, you know, 5 tips for fundraising to hopefully get content that wasn't just promo so that people would share it. And it was on Instagram, and it was just each slide was a different color, and I just had a tip on every slide. Probably one of the most successful posts that we had. There are only 60 followers on Instagram, so that's, you know, like 5 likes is actually really great. So it's also hard to talk stats, you know, because the audience is much smaller there. But so I was like, okay, great. But my other like fun saint quote ideas weren't doing well, so I scrapped those and just started doing more like multi-post like pictures for that, and it started doing a lot better. Okay, for a website, I think it's funny. I'm getting the feeling because we've just had a lot more inquiries about websites recently. So I was like, I wonder what's going on in diocesan parish world that people are redoing websites. But your website is where you get to tell your whole story. It's where people will go to get the more in-depth knowledge of your institution. And I know a lot of people have essentially like platforms on there too. Like it's where students can access grades. It's where parents can access whatever. So it does a lot of different things, but it's also where you can put all the details that you really wanted to share in that institutional video, but you knew it would be better not to. You can find it and store it on the website. Also really important that it's user friendly, that people can navigate it easily. And it's also most likely and maybe not, you all can correct me on that, where you want to lead people to land, because they can take an action of like scheduling a tour or something like that. So I like to think of different digital platforms as a way to sales funnel to your website or to particular action, and this is most likely where they would land to do that. Unless on Instagram you have a pop-up and people can schedule from there. So, which is very helpful. I've done that when looking for schools for my children. So anyways, that's kind of the overview of that. I will take questions now. I know I went through everything really quickly. Ways to connect up there. What questions do you all have? Kind of, it doesn't have to be on the talk in particular. If you have anything, yeah, go for it. Yes, Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. Yep.
Okay, and then you were talking about websites.
Yes.
So our school, we have a parent in a school. Mm-hmm. Our school is very professional. Like, it's more to promote the school. It's not for the user side. Like, it's not for the school parent. It's for people, for prospects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to repeat the question because the sheet tells me I'm supposed to. So the question is, should the school website be mainly geared towards prospective students, or should it also facilitate current students? I think it depends on the needs of your school. There are so many things that websites can do to facilitate current and future students. And I think that's very much I know schools that are like very much all online, like any communication has to take form through the website. Like that's where all of grades are posted, whatever. I think it depends on your specific demographic. There might be demographics that respond better to that, and there might be demographics that like aren't as technologically inclined, and that would actually be a hindrance. I personally think there should be a place for both on the website. To what extent that is, I'm not sure. I think it's definitely the main appeal of the website, like visually, would be for prospective students. But in terms of user friendly and use out of your website, it makes sense to have those resources available to current families.
Yeah,
go for it.
That point, I think what you said, they both have to be part of it.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. The high school my kid went to, it drives me crazy still, because you get on there and like go to sports and you see when who's playing what. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like a freaking jigsaw. You know, the pictures are 3 years old.
Yeah.
You've got kids who graduated 3 years ago. That's useless.
Yeah.
You're only as good as the content on the site.
Mm-hmm.
So prospective parents wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
They don't know that kid graduated 3 years ago. But someone who's been here a while knows that this is 3 years old.
Yeah.
Which I think reflects poorly, really poorly on the school.
Yeah.
This school has the resources to do that.
Right.
But I also have a quick question.
Yeah.
Biggest mistakes that schools make with their social media.
Yeah.
There's gotta be a list.
Yeah. I feel like there's, yes. That's a great question. I think one note about your comment of, that you made beforehand, I think that is a great example of getting feedback from stakeholders on, like website user, but like you want to talk to current parents because they will be able to, they're the ones that will tell you like, this doesn't work well for us. You know, so I think that's a great point. Biggest mistakes, social media mistakes in general. I think biggest mistakes are not focusing on engagement, honestly. I think biggest mistakes are also not regularly evaluating what you're doing. I don't know if I have examples of like specific post mistakes, I guess,
yeah,
but
I mean,
yeah.
Practices,
yeah. And yep. And I think sometimes just posting just to to post, like a lack of strategy, because it is such a huge opportunity and such a tool. If you're posting just because you feel like you need to be posting, you're probably just wasting your time and not accomplishing anything. You have to have at least a little bit of thought and strategy of what you want to accomplish for that to happen. But I would say mostly what I see from schools or parishes, dioceses, is just a lack of strategy. Usually it ends up being more of an event board. It's kind of like, and that's all it is. It's like, oh, we have a volleyball game. We have a theater production. We have ordinations, whatever it might be. And there isn't a thought of content that can actually lead to engagement. Because it is, even though your goal isn't to go viral, you want people to come to your page and find it useful. And if they're not finding it useful, then they're not going to interact, and then everything kind of just goes down the drain from there. Yeah. Yeah.
We are kind of in this situation on the diocesan level of the website. You know, you have the users that are coming for this, and the users coming for this, and that's what we're trying to figure out at the diocesan level. So I appreciate what you said. Ask the stakeholders.
Yeah. I think diocesan websites in particular are tricky because you have so many different offices that usually each have control of their own page. And that's hard to have a cohesive like look to it. But unless you have a centralized person who's making sure all of it makes sense or is used in a certain way, it's...
And then one of the things I'm seeing is like there's users that come to it, you know, who are at the offices are like, okay, here's information, here's, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then you have the general audience that's coming as like, oh, what's going on in evangelization and stuff like that, and how to, you know, it's been thrown around to have two different, you know, URLs or stuff like that. And but then also having sections like for staff or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, kind of go that way. And so let's see how many pointers.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. No, I would, what diocese are you with? Okay, I'll take a look at your website and let you know. I would love to connect with you on it. Yes, did you have a question?
Well, not a solution.
Oh, yeah, go for it. Solutions.
again, so it's just, as far as the mistakes for social media, it's just having a one-way conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that if they leave a like or anything like that to acknowledge them.
Mm-hmm.
On the videos part, we recommend a balance between, you can spend tens, twenties, or thousands of dollars on videos.
Yeah, you could.
I mean, what's the balance between that and having enough quality to where it doesn't look like an amateur?
Yeah. Yes. If you're talking about institutional videos, it's interesting because even if you're just looking at, you know, Catholic video studios are typically cheaper than, you know, like secular video studios. But at the same time, there's a very large range. And you could also go a couple of different ways. You could try and work with the filmmaker independently, and there are plus and minuses to that. Usually it's more cost efficient, but it might not actually be the easiest route to take. I can speak for Impact House Media, and I've done like 100 videos, more than 100 videos, and we've done all different styles. So a lot of it is depending on what you want to accomplish, but I would say it's reasonable if you want a high quality something to anticipate anywhere between like $6,000 to $15,000. And that's for like reasonable pricing. Some major studios would charge you $30,000 for that same video. So there's like a huge gamut of that. But if you would like ideas of kind of like, oh, what does this kind of video cost? What does that kind of video cost? I'd be happy to give references and stuff for that. Because it's what I've done for 8 years. I would say if you want, I think a lot of people typically think, oh, $5,000 would be on an upper end of a budget. But, unless you have a parishioner who's well versed in it that could do it and help you out with it, then I would say I wouldn't anticipate honestly anything lower than $6,000-ish for something that looks really professional and high quality. And a lot of filmmakers would tell you that that's probably pretty low. But, yeah.
I would add a comment to that. I know for our school, we were able to get Adobe Creative Suite. Hmm. And that includes your, video editing app.
Yeah.
And that's what I used for putting together, our video.
Yeah.
But I also have a little bit of a background in that.
How to use it. Yeah, it's true though. Well, yeah, I think too, there's also institutional video is kind of where you want to put your best foot forward in terms of looking professional. I think a lot of people could probably, there are a lot of editing like AI services and stuff too now that you could use, that you could do to have high quality video on your social media channels that isn't necessarily your institutional video, which I'm going to go into that a little bit. Very easy ways to make your video look more professional for things that you put up on social media. Audio is really helpful, and there are some very inexpensive mics. Like, you could have a wired lav mic that goes directly to your phone for $12. You could have a wireless one for $40 to $50, and it just makes the sound quality sound so much better. Other things that are really helpful, if you want to do interviews with people, just knowing lighting is helpful. So lighting, audio, and depth of field are kind of the three things that I like to tell people to be aware of. Depth of field is also framing. Natural light sources are better than fluorescent. We have all been in dressing rooms with fluorescent lighting, and we know it is not good. it doesn't look good on anyone. So if you have a natural light source, you want to essentially have the natural light source on the other side of the camera and the camera between you and that light source. You can even turn off overhead lights, and you just do lights off, get close to a window, and it gives you really nice natural lighting. You want to make sure the camera, which is also most likely your phone, you want to make sure that's eye level. A lot of times, for some reason, people end up having it too low, and then that gives you double chin action, and it also makes you look very domineering to the person that's watching the video. And another thing that helps videos look more curated, I guess you could say, is having a depth of field, which just means there's a lot of space behind you. So you're the thing that's in focus of the camera, and then there's a lot of space behind you. Usually, too, iPhones can make it kind of look blurred in the background, too, without adding a blurred filter, which is kind of looks nice. It makes you look nice and crisp, and then there's a lot of space kind of blurry behind you. So those are three things that are really easy to implement just to make things look a bit nicer. Yes, no, that's so true. But yeah, you can do a stabilizer on Amazon, or if you don't have one or you ordered one and waiting for it to come in, you can do a stack of books, but not holding it. Although at the same, yeah, exactly. I think sometimes though, if it's just social media content, all of those things are really helpful, but we're all also used to watching horrible video, on our iPhones, we're used to seeing shaky things or whatever. So you want it to look professional because you're a face of an institution, but also if you don't have the chance, but your priest is willing to give you a 30-second message, sure, go for it, I think length is also important. Usually people's attention span for videos drops off after about 11 seconds. Even when you're talking about an institutional video, I recommend not doing more than 3 minutes. If it's a super compelling story, then sure, go for it. But when I review edits, I note the time that I lost attention for the video. And, for 10 seconds off, I'm like, eh, that's not bad. Or when I critique other people's videos, I'll be like, wow, I really lost interest at 2 minutes. And this is an 8-minute long video. You just have a lot of wasted time that no one's ultimately going to watch. So yeah, longer isn't always necessarily better, especially with people's attention spans, but chink an eye in time. Any other questions? Yeah. Sorry. Yes. Go for it.
Can you give an example of a post and how you would change it to post it on your Instagram versus Facebook versus the website?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great question. So how I would take a post and repackage it for different platforms like Instagram, Facebook, and the website. Yes, newsletter. So, okay, I will give you an example of what I did for ICSC. So wherever you have the most content, take it from there and then pare it down for each platform. So for ICSC, they have their monthly bulletins that are chock full of content, like such good content. So I didn't ever have to create original content. I just had to repackage stuff from their bulletin. So for example, their bulletin has a prayer, you know, a reflection on St. Paul, a reflection from someone else. And so at the beginning of each month, I just took the monthly stewardship prayer and just posted that as a post on Instagram. I think a lot of times posting the same content on Facebook and Instagram is fine. I don't think you have to necessarily reinvent the wheel either time, unless you notice that your audience responds to something better one way on one platform than another. I noticed, at least for ICSC, that people interacted and engaged a lot more on Facebook, so it wasn't always necessary to have an image with it. So if I thought of a good engaging question, then I would say I would just post the question there, to where on Instagram it's a very visual platform, to where I would make an image with the question on it and post it like that on Instagram. So that would kind of be different ways to take larger content from your website. Say you have, what could be on a website? Like on your website, you would have like the full mission statement of your school, right? On Instagram, you could have a picture of your school and just kind of do even more like a quick, like, at our school, we value X, Y, and Z, as opposed to having kind of like the paragraph mission statement written out. And then same kind of on Facebook. Trying to think what else I did. Yeah, honestly, a lot of things. Instagram, the key thing is it's visual. So like adding video or a picture is going to go a long way. A lot of people also use Instagram, in some Facebook, like a micro blog. So like they don't mind reading on, you know, like the image gets their attention. The first kind of line above the fold before they have to click to read more is what grabs your attention. So that could be, like an impactful quote. And then you kind of go on and kind of with your musings after that.
Mm-hmm. So, as far as social media, is Facebook maybe over time? What do you think schools should be on?
Yeah, I would. What I've seen most schools do, and what I think makes sense, is LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook, because that's where like most of your demographic in terms of parents and donors are going to be. Facebook probably more so for, maybe even more so than Instagram. But LinkedIn, I actually had never thought about LinkedIn before until a school that we started managing their account. They're like, could you also manage LinkedIn? Because we want to have a presence there for prospective hires. And I was like, oh, yes. I was like, that is very smart. So I think that makes a lot of sense in terms of like curating a professional look and that people would want to then work for you. I think makes a lot of sense.
Well, our target audience is young parents, basically 25 to 35-year-old.
Yeah. I would say they're probably more on Instagram than on Facebook. So I'd say probably parents are probably more on Instagram. Donors, if they're of an older age than 35, are probably going to be on Facebook. So yeah, that's kind of the spread. I personally am within that age range of young parents, and I'm on Instagram more than anything else for my own like personal use. But I'm also getting to the point where I don't care about newer forms. I'm like, I don't want to learn how to use TikTok. I don't want to learn how to use all those other things. But yeah. 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 Sorry.
I have two questions related to Meta. For Facebook particularly, is it still worth using doing paid posts and doing ads? Are people really engaging with those? And do you recommend a third party platform such as Waiter or anything that's not Meta Business Suite for posting on both of those platforms?
Yeah, so what we've used, repeating the question. Do I think paid advertisement or boosting essentially is worth it? It depends. So we've used it for Catholic Link, again, really huge platform. We've used it for Catholic Links for things that are really important to us, but we always start out by boosting with a very low dollar amount to see if it's worth it, and then if it is, then we'll boost it more. Because sometimes, depending on the content, it can take, and sometimes it can't. So honestly, we've done as low as $5, just to see, and we're like, whoa, that was a huge spike. Great. Like, let's throw 10 more dollars at it, you know? Because it's still, even though it's a huge platform, it's a small nonprofit with a small budget. So we don't throw too much money into boosting things unless it's something that will actively drive revenue back to us. So I would say sometimes it is totally worth it depending on what you're using it for. But you can always start at a small amount instead of throwing like a huge investment in it. One of the schools that we're managing the account for, they put a lot of money into ads for Instagram before we came, and they said they saw a lot of traffic. They specifically paid for ads on Instagram to get people to schedule a tour. And they said they got a lot of inquiries, but it wasn't actually the audience that would be attracted to their school. So they decided they weren't going to do that this year. They wanted to try and have someone else just manage the account and see if they could get more of an accurate audience. Because it was a Catholic classical school, and people would reach out and be like, oh, we're interested, but like they weren't actually interested in a Catholic education at all. It just looked like a good private education, you know? So it can go either way. They got a lot of traffic from it, but it wasn't actually traffic that turned into admissions. Yeah. Did you want to add something? They will sometimes. You do, but now they're starting to discriminate some against religious organizations because we used to, for Catholic Link, we used to get $10,000 a month for ads, and they canceled it because they said we were discriminatory because we're Catholic. So you can't, and maybe it'd be different for schools. Like ours was very much like an evangelization platform, so maybe that had something to do with it. But yes, Google Grants does, it's a fairly simple process to apply, and you can get $10,000 in at Google Ad Grants. Which goes very fast, by the way. But yeah, that is an option. And then what was your other question? I'm sorry. Oh, yes. What did we use? We always use Buffer. And I honestly don't have experience outside of the Meta platform and Buffer. Buffer had all the needs that we needed. I know Hootsuite is popular, but Hootsuite is also pretty expensive, from what I can recall. That's helpful for me because it, like Buffer and stuff like that, because it allows me to do several different accounts, not just several different channels within one account. But I always had Buffer was super easy to manage. Yeah. Did you have a question? Yeah. Ways to gain new followers. That's a great question. Finding out what people engage with is kind of most helpful because what people engage with in regards to like, they like, comment, or share, namely sharing. Because if people are sharing your stuff, it's going to get out to a wider audience than you are naturally getting with your own like original posts, which might attract more people to your page. But I think too, if you're talking about within schools, promote your social media platforms within your school. Like if you're managing it for a school or a parish, then like put it in the bulletin, hey, follow us on social media. Or if you're at a school that has a weekly newsletter, so like, hey, follow us on social media for these reasons. Organic followers within something that's as niche as your particular Catholic school, I think would be kind of hard because you're not really looking to reach other people outside of like your audience. I mean, I guess you are in regards to like potential parents. But I don't even know if potential parents would necessarily follow. It's more so like they use it as a reference to see like what you're about, not necessarily to follow. So yeah, I would say for internal people to join more, so it's a more effective tool for communication, find what other ways that already exist with your organization to be able to push out and encourage people to follow you would be number one. Any other questions, thoughts? Yeah?
You mentioned that the social media is a good way to drive people to your website. Mm-hmm. Would you do that just by putting a link to the website there?
Yeah, I would do a lot of what I did. You can put the link in your bio. So I would do that, or if you can put a link in the post itself, that's really helpful. In terms of on stories, that's really helpful. And you can also kind of put teasers in the sense of like, oh yeah, you know, here's a little bit of information. For the whole story or for all of the information, go to our website. So it can also be in the copy that you use to encourage people to click on your link. If you give people everything that they want on social media, then there's little use for them to go to your website. So I would say in the copy that you use, and then placing them on, like, directly in post on stories, and making sure that you say link in bio for more static posts is helpful. Yeah.
Do people still do the link in bio?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been told from different that's become, like, older.
Yeah, I think it's partially... Yes, I would say, do people still use link in bio? I think it's helpful to have it there. I don't think it will hurt you to have it there. So, Yes, no, I agree. So I think it's just a way to cover your basis and to make sure that people aren't frustrated when they're looking for stuff. But I would not only do that, I guess. Yeah. So yeah, do I have a rule of thumb for what I would put in a story as opposed to a post? I almost always share a post in our stories. That's kind of my rule of thumb, at least for more promotion for our posts. Things that I think are engaging, but like not timeless necessary, not something that people would care to refer back to, I will often put in stories and not posts. It's funny, today for ICSE, I posted a picture of lunch, and I wanted to actually just post that in stories instead of a post on like the main page, because it's like, who cares if we see a picture of lunch again? You know, like, this isn't offering any, but I was like, but we haven't put anything in the feed for a while, so like, I'll do that. But stuff that, is more timeless that people might want to refer back to, I put in an actual post. Things that are more for just like, engagement, or like, you know, this happened today, this is fun, whatever, I'll put in a story, and not worry about making a whole post for it. So, yeah.
And I don't know if you've heard of this, for stories, I found a Storyto.
Cool.
Where you can actually program and schedule a story, and you can still use like the different things that you have to normally do on your phone.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've heard of that, but that's been really helpful to be able to schedule out
stories. What is it called?
Storyto.
Storyto.
Yeah, we've had it for about almost a year. Cool. Storyto.com.
Cool. One thing too, for a video resource that's helpful, Opus, OPUS.pro, PRO, it's an AI editing tool that once that you see, if you look at the website, you'll notice like how many platforms you probably use it, because it can take long form videos, like long form interviews, and cut them into social media bites for you. So you might have like one long interview, and it'll take out 10 social media clips and add subtitles. And it's very cool. And it'll sometimes too, I don't know all the intricacies of it because I don't manage the YouTube for Catholic Link, but it will like cut back and forth between camera angles, or like punch in to make it look like there's a camera angle. So that's, I know they have a free version too that has like a time limit of like how much video content you can upload, but that even the paid version I think is like $9 a month. It's not that bad. So if that's also a way that you can ask AI to help you. Yeah. Opus.pro, OPUS.PRO. Awesome. We can go ahead and wrap it up. I will hang around for the next like 5 minutes, and then I'm actually helping do some very low technology testimonies downstairs for ICSC. So if you'll have any questions, you can, or want to connect, I'd love to talk with you. And I'll probably be down at the Impact House Media booth for a little while after this. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.